So the first thing you'll probably notice is I changed the title of my talk a little bit. That's the danger of submitting your talk title in July when you don't have the data until August. Just wanted to acknowledge my co-author, Dr. Barry Cook, with the Canadian Forest Service, the Northern Forestry Centre at Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. This is where I work with Barry as a postdoc. Beginning in the late 1990s, the Canadian province of British Columbia began to experience one of the worst Mount Pine beetle outbreaks ever recorded, such that by 2005, populations had increased to the point that beetles were able to successfully cross the Rocky Mountains in significant numbers and establish on the eastern slopes inside the Canadian province of Alberta. And I've just sort of highlighted the British Columbia and Alberta here in red in case you're wondering exactly where they are. They didn't vote for John McCain, it's just red. So this, what we affectionately refer to as the blowout, has raised the specter that mountain pine beetle will successfully invade the boreal forest of northern Canada by switching from its normal host of lodgepole pine into jack pine. And mountain pine beetle has been shown to successfully attack jack pine, and it can reproduce its populations. And the threat is if it can attack in sufficient numbers, there's no reason why it couldn't spread across all of northern Canada. What I've shown here in the light green is the distribution of lodgepole pine, and this is the distribution of jack pine. And as you can see, it stretches all the way across Canada. So this question of if mountain pine beetle can spread across Canada has sort of become an important area of research. And the question we're addressing is, what is the risk of mountain pine beetle spreading through the jack pine forests of Alberta? And by extension, are there practices that could be implemented to slow or stop that spread? And we're addressing this question by building a model that will simulate the beetle's population dynamics at the landscape scale, and specifically how populations grow and change over time and how these dynamics change. And the approach we've adopted is to build what's called a process-based model that accurately reflects the beetle's ecology. And what do I mean by a process-based model? That's simply that the functions we use to develop to predict the beetle's behavior are based in the beetle's ecology. And the advantage of this method is, rather than developing a model that's just sort of tuned to one place at one time, we can ideally be able to take it and use it in other places to be able to predict the beetle's biology. So the first step, and the one I'm going to discuss today, is how we've gone about generating those beetle functions and some of the results that we have. So fortunately, we don't sort of have to start totally from scratch, as there's a good deal of theory that predicts how mountain pine beetle populations behave. And this figure represents that behavior, what is more commonly referred to as the Allee effect. On the x-axis, we have the population size at time t, so that's nt. And on the y-axis, we have r, which is rate of population change, or essentially which is population you have now divided by the population you have before. So if r is greater than 1, your population is increasing. If r is less than 1, your population is decreasing. If r is equal than 1, your population is stable. Now, owing to a property of logarithms, if you take the log of your R value, if it's positive, it means your population is going up. If it's negative, your population is going down. If it's zero, your population is stable. So we can draw a graph like this that sort of describes the beetle's population dynamics. And what you see is that for small populations, the growth rate is negative. But once a population goes beyond a certain size, it's positive. And what we expect is a population will sort of increase to this upper equilibrium point. And that we call this the endemic and the epidemic equilibrium. And this curve in nature is what we call is probably an emergent process of these two relationships, one that goes on in endemic stands in the endemic case and one that goes on in the epidemic case. And we get this relationship for pine beetles because small numbers of individuals aren't able to initiate a mass attack and overwhelm tree defenses. But once you have a large enough population, they can overwhelm trees and initiate and be able to attack trees and kill trees, and then you have an outbreak. So endemic and epidemic. So, and now this idea that mountain pine beetle is likely governed by an Allee effect is not new. Reed in 1963 attributes some of his observations that mountain pine beetle performance might not be optimal at larger densities to this Allee effect. And Alan Berryman published this curve in the late 1970s and appears to have eaten the title of the paper, but it was published in the Bulletin de l'Entomologie Suisse. And he took two data sets from Montana and was able to fit this sort of a Lee-like curve to these data and demonstrated the two stable equilibria. But he just fit the curves by eye here. So if we're interested in modeling how mountain pine beetle behaves, we need to be able to describe the shape of this R function, and for which we're specifically interested in the two equilibrium points and shown by the question marks. And to do that, we need data that describes R with respect to some estimate of population size. Now, ideally, we go out to the woods and collect this data over a range of population sizes and fit some functions to the data. And we might do this in a few different places at a few different times and see if those functions sort of overlap. Unfortunately, mostly because I'm a postdoc, we don't have the luxury of doing that. What we did instead is sort of taking some inspiration from Berryman as we go to the literature and see if there's those kind of data already collected by people over the years. And what we find is that's the case. They found 9 studies where authors had gone out to the woods and recorded tree mortality over time in a number of different stands and over a time scale between the 1920s and 2000s. And in the year 2000, we took these data and amassed it all together and then used that to fit these functions to predict beetle behavior or beetle population dynamics. And I was also fortunate that in a number of these studies, the authors also collected the same measures in forests that had been cut in order to minimize intertree competition or to minimize the effect of mountain pine beetle attack as a way of limiting tree mortality. And so what I was able to do is develop functions both for uncut stands and stands that had been harvested. So taking all that data, putting it all together and analyzing it, you get these 4 functions. So what we have here are 4 functions that relate the rate of change of population size measured in terms of number of trees killed per hectare per year down here on the x-axis. And on the y-axis we have R, the rate of population change. And so the upper 2 graphs are for forests that were not cut and the bottom 2 are for forests that were cut. And what we see is that we essentially have 2 different functions. In the upper graphs, we see that it's the relationship is fairly flat and not very steep. What we see in the bottom is that it's also fairly flat, but the relationship is curvilinear in this relationship, in this part of the curve. And what this suggests is that there's different processes operating in uncut stands versus cut stands. And we can speculate as to what this is. This might be increased tree vigor resulting from decreased competition after 4 trees have been removed. This could be sort of increased wind flow through cut stands disrupting host finding or mate finding, or just the loss of acceptable hosts. You cut some trees out, beetles come in and eat the good trees, and there's none left, and so there's nothing left for the population. And I'll get to why having these different functions for beetle populations is important in a second. But returning to this, the whole point of this exercise, what is the equilibrium point of these relationships? We can do some simple calculations to determine that. What I've done here is just showing the graphs again. And here what I've done is just determine the equilibrium value. So just what's the value of the relationship when y equals 0. And because these were determined in natural logs, because what I did is just back transformed from natural logs into real numbers. And what we see here is the equilibrium density for the population in cut stands is roughly 30 trees per hectare per year. And what we see in cut stands above and uncut stands below is that it's roughly 20 trees per hectare. But if you sort of look at the error bars on that and do the statistics, they're not really that different. They're essentially the same. The equilibrium density is roughly about 20, 25, 30 trees per hectare per year of mortality. What this suggests is that cutting stands doesn't actually change the equilibrium density. What it actually changes is just the function of the beetle's relationship. And this is useful for our modeling effort which is what we want to do to be able to ultimately predict how pine beetle would behave in jack pine. Is that if we're trying to predict how beetles will behave in natural stands versus those that are harvested, we need to know that we'll need to acknowledge we have to use different functions depending on the history of the stand. And this is important because harvesting has been seen as sort of proposed as one way to be able to minimize the effect of mountain pine beetle attacks or mountain pine beetle damage in jack pine stands. Thank you. Going back to this idea of limiting spread in through the jack pine forest, this is a map of stand density or pine stand density for Canada, and red is lower densities. And what you see here is that we have lower density of pine in Alberta than we do in British Columbia. And what this suggests is that if we're trying to model dynamics in British Columbia, we would have to use different functions, so you have more linear functions than in Alberta where our stands are thinner. We might use our more curvilinear functions. And so if we're trying to model spread and what we can do to limit spread, we need to know we need to use different functions. So thank you.